Welcome to the Rosetta Health Podcast Series. Founded in 2012, the Sequoia Project is a nonprofit with a mission to advance the implementation of secure, interoperable, nationwide health information exchange. And today we have the very special pleasure of speaking with Marianne Yeager, CEO of the Sequoia Project, about her organization and the future of health data exchange. And Marianne, how are you doing today?
Oh, thanks. Thanks for inviting me to talk with you today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. And let's start at the top. If you don't mind, give us a high-level overview of the Sequoia Project, its mission, and all that good stuff.
Well, sure. So we are a nonprofit with a public mission, as you mentioned, singularly focused on advancing interoperable health information exchange. I think the twist that we bring to bear is that we're really chartered to advance this for the public good. So we do operate as a public-private collaborative. And what that means is that we bring together stakeholders across the health IT ecosystem from the public sector and the private sector and really try to focus in on and solve real-world interoperability challenges. The other aspect of our work, in addition to focusing on that, is we also provide support for independent initiatives. And today we have four, the first of which is the eHealth Exchange, and that's a nationwide health information network. We also support Care Equality, and that's a framework that health information networks abide by, and it enables them to interconnect with other networks in a standardized way. The third initiative we support is actually one we support in conjunction with the Radiological Society of North America, or RSNA. And they've really been focusing on trying to advance image exchange. So we support the RSNA Image Share Validation Program. What that simply means is it's an interoperability testing program that verifies that health IT systems comply with standards to enable interoperable exchange of medical images and reports. That's three, the eHealth Exchange, Care Equality, and the RSNA testing program. And then finally, the newest initiative we just added is called PULSE, and that stands for the Patient Unified Lookup Service for Emergencies. And as our newest program, it's focused on enabling disaster healthcare volunteers to access patient records and scenarios where individuals are injured or displaced by disasters. So that's a little bit about us. Of course, we have a quite unique beginning and taking forward work that was started by the federal government and continuing it in the private sector.
Oh, that's excellent. Wow, that poll sounds very interesting. Is that new? I don't think I've seen anything come across. Are we breaking some news here today, Marianne, on that? That would be fantastic.
I don't know if it's news per se. We did announce that we were supporting this. It is very unique, and that was again started by the federal government, ONC, in conjunction with California Department of Disaster Response and the Emergency Management Services Authority. They got some HHS idea funding, and they used that to develop and incubate PULSE. And then once the service was up, it basically allows disaster healthcare volunteers who are credentialed and licensed by the state to be able to sign in and query for records when they're at a disaster healthcare locations, alternative care facilities, essentially, field hospitals, tents, schools where clinics are set up if people are displaced or injured by disasters, and when the healthcare delivery system, if it has limited capacity or worse, if there's disruption or damage to healthcare facilities, it allows people to seek care in these other locations and to have their health records accessible. It is new in that it's Sequoia's newest initiative. We did support the implementation of PULSE in response to the California wildfires last year and then continue to expand it and bring it on board as a new program, basically starting in 2018. And the PULSE has been integrated and implemented in conjunction with the eHealth Exchange. So again, by being able to tend to a national network allows, for that information to be accessible in places where they're impacted by disasters, natural or man-made.
Wow, that's great stuff there, Marianne. Appreciate the update on that effort there. Certainly have a lot going on. And another thing I noticed fairly recently is that you all issued a white paper about patient matching challenges. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so patient matching is really, we realize it's a pretty universal challenge, particularly in the U.S., to enable and get to ubiquitous exchange of health information. And so given the breadth and depth of the connectivity that we support through our initiatives and others, we knew that this is just one of the key areas we needed to focus. And so really to find a practical way to improve patient matching using today's technologies and to really have a real-world impact. So we were not aiming to try to solve patient matching you know, through a new technology or a unique patient identifier, rather, we really felt that given the breadth of connectivity today and takes a while for new technologies and standards to be implemented, we wanted to focus on developing a practical resource that could be used by those implementing and managing patient identities and responsible for matching. So we published a paper in conjunction with Intermountain Healthcare about a year or two ago that really showcased a case study and the findings that identified the root causes of low match rates. And surprisingly, I mean, the findings are so eye-opening. The root causes were often due to data quality issues or treating data elements differently, and also different matching rules and different identity management rules that different exchange partners had. So while there's been a lot of focus on improving patient matching internally and patient identities within institutions, by having different approaches with two different institutions, that was creating an incompatibility and resulting in high errors. So by focusing on developing a common set of rules, we were able to establish a baseline, a minimum, to improve patient matching with today's technologies, as well as a patient matching maturity model. And because we really developed this through a cooperative public-private consensus process, we thought it was also important to publish the document and take public comments. And so we did, and brought together a work group who dispositioned those comments, really improved the paper, and was able to garner lessons learned from the field. So again, this is all, you know, if you actually live and breathe this issue every day, this resource is for you. And so we recently published the updated version of the matching rules and maturity model about a month or so ago. And this will continue to be a living resource. We think that there are additional improvements we can make and that will continue to incrementally increase the rigor of the rules and the expanse of them, and that we can really improve matching overall with having to re-engineer health IT.
Wow, that's great stuff. And also, too, I saw that you recently restructured with two distinct subsidiaries, one for eHealth Exchange and the other for Care Equality. What's the effort or why the reason behind this restructuring?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we wanted to really be very transparent about the restructure. It's actually the mechanics of our own process, but we announced our intention to restructure a couple months ago because eHealth Exchange has grown in terms of its national footprint and, you know, significant connectivity. And the eHealth Exchange has done a masterful job in connecting health systems and large healthcare provider organizations and CVS, MinuteClinic, and Walgreens organizations like that, and DaVita, HIEs as well. But it was really getting to the smaller physician practices that may be connecting through their vendor network or through different networks and service providers. And so that was really why Care Equality was formed. Well, the eHealth Exchange is in the process of becoming a participating network in Care Equality. And so what that means is that the eHealth Exchange will be subject to the terms of the Care Equality Agreement that all the networks have to abide by, and they're also subject to Care Equality governance. So it was very important for there to not be a conflict of interest and to also make sure that the interests of eHealth Exchange and Care Equality were separate. And to date, you know, up until that time, all of these activities that I've been describing all operate under one company. And so it was important for eHealth Exchange really has grown to be sustainable independently. And so similarly, Care Equality is growing and maturing. And so it was very important to have those interests separated and have their own governance, which they already have. And so Sequoia will really also be able to operate and focus on providing management services support to eHealth Exchange and separate management and services support to Care Equality. And that eHealth Exchange, pardon me, will be treated just like any other Care Equality implementer and not, you know, really given any special consideration because of its, you know, affiliation. So we're very excited about that. Sequoia will be making some announcements about some new developments we have in the work, some new projects we're going to take on at our fall meeting. And so that'll be the latest and greatest in probably just a few weeks here.
Oh, that's great. That's exciting stuff. That's great. And here's the $30,000 question, which we'll throw it out anyway, since you focus on eat, sleep, and breathe this. But in your opinion, what are the biggest health data exchange challenges today?
Oh, gosh, there are a number of challenges. And, I, you know, I like to think of challenges as opportunities to improve interoperability because we don't like to just say, oh, my goodness, there's a problem. Our goal is, well, let's try to fix it. So I said one of the first big needs is that more providers need to join health information networks. We really can't have interoperability if providers are not part of a network. They'll be forever in a world of point to point. So getting every provider connected to a health information network is key. And I think we're on that trajectory. you know, with eHealth Exchange and, of course, connecting, and as well as definitely with care equality, which is growing exponentially. We also really need to see health IT systems and the implementation of those to continue to mature in a way that they have implemented the standards in an interoperable way and that it actually works in production. We're starting to see that maturation more, but we need these systems to really also more specifically support additional constrained requirements for clinical content so that the data transmitted, such as summary care records, so that, you know, if there's a more standardized way that those standards have been implemented consistently, and so that the data are populated and consistently in a way so that the data are usable for decision making. So that's key, is really looking at the payload. There's opportunities there. We did publish a specification that was collectively developed in conjunction with Care Equality and Commonwealth and eHealth Exchange and other stakeholders, and we think that that's a great starting point to continue to iterate on that. And also important to keep in line with expansions of the U.S. clinical data set. I think, again, you know, we look at challenges as opportunities for improvement. What we think will really move the ball is by focusing on real-world implementation approaches. Yes, we do need to be mindful of evolving and standards and capabilities and new opportunities for innovation. But if we really want to get the most out of the investment in health IT today, we need to really focus on how to make it work. And that is going to take users and those who develop health IT systems working together, again, across all of our industry in the healthcare sector, across government, and to work together to solve those. And we think this is all doable. We've seen it, right? We have seen progress is being made, but it really requires everyone to be on the same page in terms of not only just having shared goals. We all want seamless, ubiquitous interoperability, true interoperability. We all have to agree on the priorities. What are the key issues where we really need to come together and fix them? It's maybe not 100 things, but maybe can we start by, you know, the top two or three issues, like the issues I just mentioned, and having a venue, you know, like Sequoia, bringing together the implementation community in a neutral way to work on this together. So those are some of the things on top of our mind.
That's great. What a great rundown there. And in many ways, you answered part of my question. You talked about the future of health data exchange. So tell us how you envision Sequoia Project's role in advancing interoperability into the future, current future, and maybe even further into the future.
Well, you know, I think there's great promise for interoperability. We are starting to see tangible benefits of health information exchange as it becomes more widely adopted and used. And we need to continue learning. And I see our role at Sequoia is expanding that convening role and having targeted matters that we bring together and really try to galvanize the community to focus on those. I think the proof points with, you know, patient matching, we're starting to see some improvements there, and now with clinical content, I think emulating that and really being focused and iterating those two, and then also being mindful of this incredible and future and current implementations of FHIR. So we've, as an example there, you know, we also want to contribute our learnings and the developments that we've made to the public for public good. And so that's another opportunity. We implemented FHIR, or a healthcare directory. The specification and the code is publicly available because we want directories to interoperate. So I think also new public policies and rulemaking are going to have a pretty major impact, you know, with the information blocking proposed rule expected to be published this fall, and then ONC's work on the trusted exchange framework. So in those two areas, in addition, Sequoia will, you know, have a very dedicated focus to those two, because it is going to not only just impact interoperability, it could shape the future evolution of it. And we want to have a voice and bring to bear our experiences and expertise in supporting interoperability to date.
That's awesome. That's great, Marianne. This has been a wonderful podcast, and really appreciate your time and your insights. Is there anything else to add today? Anything we may have missed?
Well, I have to let you know that September is National Preparedness Month. So we're really using this as an opportunity to celebrate some of the progress with Pulse, which we've talked about. But I think it's just a really incredible opportunity to, again, take an activity that was incubated by the federal government and bring it forward and offer it in the private sector and with the state agencies. And so I think it's just fitting to share, I guess, in closing, our dedication to continue supporting the expansion of Pulse and really using, building upon the national footprint of interoperability for other purposes, again, for the public good. So, and thank you so much for having me.
That's great. What a great way to end it. It's our pleasure. And for all of our listeners, you just heard an exclusive Rosetta Health podcast interview with Marianne Yeager, the CEO of the Sequoia Project. And she was kind enough to give us a deep dive on her organization and the future of health data exchange. And Marianne, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you again.